you are afforded a plus minus 15 minutes to present the annual report and performance. Then we'll take it from there. Thank you, National Commissioner.
Thank you, Chairperson and members of the committee, for the opportunity to address me. I would like to appreciate the well wishes that I have received from members of the committee during my time of convalescence. And indeed, it is a pleasure this today to be here at the committee to come and provide the Correctional Services annual report. Chairperson, we undertook a turnaround strategy in the Department of Correctional Services that focused on governance as a key priority. And for us, what was important is that we need to be effective and efficient in especially internal controls, financial management, and reporting systems, but also to work together with the Auditor General and all other stakeholders that have a role to play in corrections to ensure that concerns that are raised by them, advice that is given to us, is also taken seriously and implemented. And that is why today our situation with regard to audit opinion is much different to the one that we have been having a number of years ago. I think one must applaud the management and officials of correctional services who have tirelessly put their shoulders to work to ensure that we improve on our situation. And Chairperson, maybe just from my side is to also emphasize the fact that there has been significant work that has been done over the years, and last year the work was actually to put a cherry on top of what we had been doing, because last year the area that qualified us was contingent liability, and therefore we had to put measures in place to address that. But what is important, Chairperson, is that it is our understanding of our correctional system and work that makes us to understand our situation as it is and do our best to ensure that the public funds that are entrusted to us, we are able to expend properly in accordance to the law. And therefore, we had never had a doubt that our work is not going to be easy. It had been from the word go that running a correctional system in the Republic of South Africa is going to be difficult. Looking at our situation, looking at our budget allocation, looking at our infrastructure challenges, looking at overcrowding levels that we encounter from day to day. And therefore, we can only, Chairperson, be supported by ourselves and be guided by ourselves as to which way you think we should go to alleviate our situation and make sure that corrections in South Africa also get the attention that it deserves. We are challenged with overcrowding, almost 34%. As we speak now, Chairperson, we are at 159,000 offenders, so as we have accommodation for 120. That indicates to us that we have an overcrowding of 59,000 in our facilities and so on. And coupled with all the other challenges that we have, Chairperson, of vacancies at critical positions, but also, Chairperson, having a correctional system where maybe through our own we have created a situation of overcrowding. Maybe just to explain, because I know some of the members attend and also visit our facilities, we started with a double banking system. Now we are having a five banker system in our facilities. And even what is worse is that there are those offenders that sleep on mattresses on the floor. Now this manifests itself mainly in our urban facilities. Your Portsmouth is seriously overcrowded. Our Johannesburg, Pretoria, Seven Westland, Port Elizabeth and others, Hoedspruit, Bloemfontein, severely overcrowded. And what we have actually done was to run five prisons in one, because each layer is actually the equivalent of another prison. But what is worse, we have never increased our staff. And this results in our staff having a lot of stress, absenteeism being at its highest, chairperson, and also stress levels. It is thus important at this point that we make you aware of the situation so that you also, during the course of this year, are able in your oversight visit to also have a look at this real situation. Facilities, chairperson, 2 weeks ago I was in Portsmouth. There's a complete unit that is not in use because when it rains, water pours through the ceiling into the facility. You can't have more people in there. Our state of facilities is in dire straits. We were supposed to have built some prisons some time ago, chairperson, but we didn't do that because we changed the procurement. It was to be 6 PPPs, and then we decided that we don't want it in the same context as the two current PPPs. And therefore, we're looking at a model of funding. And therefore, one wants to really make the committee aware of the enormous challenges that we're facing on a daily basis. Chairperson, however, there are men and women that work with me daily, men and women that do their best to ensure that we also perform in accordance to our set objectives. In the past financial year, chairperson, we have an overall achievement of 62%. But what is important in the other indicators that we would be indicating to yourself why we did not achieve, it is not that everything was zero. There had been some performance, but not to the two main criteria that we have set in government, that it is either achieved or not achieved. Therefore, if it is not green, if it is not green, then it means you have not achieved. Whether you have achieved to a point of 80% or 90%, you have not achieved anything at all. And that's what I would like to say even at this point. But chairperson and the members, I can assure you that we're going to do our best. We're going to strengthen the areas that have been alluded to by the AG. We have had our sessions with the AG, and our relationship with the Auditor General of South Africa is a very good one, where they, from time to time, make us aware of the areas that we need to attend to. And we are committed to ensure that we are going to maintain the status that we are in, and as time goes on, improve on it. Because our challenge now is to achieve again an unqualified audit opinion by the Auditor General. Therefore, we still have quite a lot of work to do in terms of governance, in terms of ensuring there's compliance to our internal control, but also importantly is to have consequence management in the entirety of correctional services, something that was never said. So, chairperson, just from my side, as an introduction, to say those three words, these men and women that are here, chairperson, you know them, they know you, there's no new one, it's only they did not put on uniform today. But otherwise, if they were in the grounds, we would have recognized them easily. So I'd like to put the CDC strategic management, Mr. Kastenga, to take us through, which we would like to believe some of this presentation has been done to the committee. And without any waste of time, to the situation, I can do that.
Thank you, Chair, and honorable members. The presentation I'm going to be taking you through is the one which is titled Annual Performance Report 2015-16. The total of 96 slides. So, Chair, with your indulgence, I would like to talk us through items one, and under item two, I will talk to the audit, the AG's findings on the predetermined objectives. And then I'll deal with item four, which is the administrative. I am on page one, slide one, which is the presentation outline. Yeah. So I think the area that I wanted to indicate is that on item three, which talks to the detailed performance, which is slides 15 to 77, that is more the detail of the performance around the indicators in the APP. And I'd like to propose that we take that one, that section as read, but we'll be able to entertain any questions that might arise around that area. And that I focus more on the issues of the Auditor General and what the department has put in place in order to address those issues. Then that would cover what I think the AG dealt with this morning as well. And then I'll hand over to the CFO to handle the issues around the financial statements and the AG's funding. Okay, thank you. Okay, so if I may take you to slide four. That just gives the overall summary of performance for the department. To say that we had 41 performance indicators for the 2015-16 financial year. And of those 41 performance indicators, we had 47 targets. We achieved 29 of them, and 18 of them we didn't achieve. So that gave us an overall performance level of 62% achievement on our total performance indicators for the year. If I may go on to slide 7. Which indicates that the audit of performance information for 2015-16 by the AG covered three of the line function programs of the department, which is program 2, incarceration, 3, rehabilitation, and program 4, which is care. If we go on to the following slide, under all of the programs that were audited, there were material findings that arose from the audit process. Under program 2, which was incarceration, there was a disclaimer on the usefulness of the performance information and an adverse opinion on the reliability. The root cause identified by the AG was that there was insufficient evidence on the validity of reported performance information against source documentation. The second issue was inconsistent implementation of the technical indicator descriptions, and that reported information was not reviewed and agreed to supporting schedules. With the next program, which was rehabilitation, we were qualified on usefulness and had an adverse opinion on the reliability. The key issue there being that there was insufficient evidence on to validate the reported performance information. And then on the final program 4, which is care, there was an adverse opinion on usefulness and an adverse opinion on reliability. The key thing there being that the reasons that we provided for our underachievement or overachievement were not supported by evidence that was provided. And that also under this program, there was an incorrect and inconsistent implementation of operating procedures and the technical indicator descriptions. And also that there was inadequate information to support what we had reported, and that there wasn't sufficient review of information that was reported. Now, I think the remedial actions, I'll address them when I get to the item 4. I'd just like to take us to the next slide, which says that the additional issues that were raised by the AG was that because of the findings that were raised on the previous slide, there were material misstatements in terms of how we reported, because in misapplying the technical indicator descriptions, we had to restate some of the information that we reported. So there were some corrections that were done to the initial information that we submitted. Another key issue that they raised was that the department's systems to collate and report performance information are not adequate, and that the information system that supports our reporting of performance information is non-existent. So in view of these overall findings of the AG, the first one that I would like to address is the one which we are looking at now on this slide 9, around the issue of a automated performance information system. Now, we have an indication that with the introduction of the integrated inmate management system and the rollout of the enterprise architecture, we are in the process of actually automating the information that underlies our performance indicators in a comprehensive way. So for the 2016-17 financial year, which is the current year, we're in the process of automating 5 of these performance indicators, which will deal with the issues of escapes, injuries, unnatural deaths, and around the budgeting process. So there is a gradual implementation of the automation of performance information. So we will get to a position where we are able to actually, rather than have manual calculations and paperwork moving from centers to regions, we will be doing it at a touch of a button. But as I said, that is something that is an incremental process that we've put in place. However, in the interim, we've also introduced administrative measures that would help us to manage the current manual environment that we are working in. And maybe for those administrative measures, I would like to refer you to go to slide 78. So after having looked at all of the underlying causes for the inconsistencies in our reporting and the incompleteness of reporting, we have instituted certain measures in the current financial year to address the processes and the administration around the management of performance information. So one of the things that we've done is that whereas in most instances or in some instances information was being handled on an ad hoc basis at the correctional center level, we've actually now nominated specific individuals to handle performance information on an ongoing basis, which would mean that now we have dedicated officials who are dealing with that on a consistent basis, and therefore we should improve in terms of consistency there. Another key issue that we've introduced is a key performance area in the performance agreements of all senior managers, which talks specifically to the management of performance information, and that their performance would also be measured along those lines. Another key issue is that we need to have operational plans that are aligned throughout the 6 regions of the country that go down to central level, and that those need to be approved, and that the targets in those operational plans are not subject to change during the financial year, because that was also one of the areas where we had challenges, where we were chasing moving targets on an ongoing basis, and therefore consistency was a problem. Changes to performance information on an ongoing basis was also another area of problem, but we have addressed that and indicated that changes on an ongoing basis will not be accepted, and if they are going to be made, then representations have to be made to the National Commissioner by whichever region to substantiate why those changes must be made. I think the next area is the area of adherence to timelines. One of the key issues that we have also introduced now is so that we have strict reporting timelines in which we need to report to the DPME on a 30-day and a 60-day basis. So we have introduced and we are going to reinforce the specific timetable that requires information to move from center level up to regional level and finally to head office and then to the central process. As part of that process as well, in terms of ensuring consequence management, there is a requirement for people to sign off when they submit the information, where they indicate that they have verified the information and that the submission that has been made is indeed true, a true reflection of the activities that have taken place during that quarter. So that should there be any differences or should there be any disparities going forward, there is recourse to specific individuals who have been assigned the responsibility of managing that performance information. And then I think the last key issue is obviously the action plan to all of the audit findings that have been raised by the Auditor General. The action plan has been put together and between the strategic management unit, internal audit, and the internal control unit, that will be monitored on an ongoing basis during the financial year so that we take a view to reducing all of the audit findings from the current financial 15-16 year. Chair, at this point, I think I'll hand over to the CFO to talk to the financial statement issues raised by the AG.
There is a proposal that before CFO presents the financial aspect, we give honorable members time to make a few comments on what we have presented and what the National Commissioner has presented. Are we in agreement, members? Okay. Over to you, honorable members. I see Honorable Horn, Honorable Maila, Honorable Majake. Okay. Honorable Horn.
Thank you, Madam Acting Chair. I want to comment and ask regarding the issue of these performance targets and the fact that the usefulness and reliability of the information is still leading to qualified and adverse opinions as part of the audit opinion. Now, we, in our interaction with the AG just before lunch, we were, as a matter of fact, informed along the lines of what the department has said just now, that the root of the problem is the manual collation of data and then what the AG called a different interpretation at different centers or on at different regional levels on what must be reported or the guidelines in any area. Now, like last year, the department again today says to us that the way they will address this problem is by having dedicated officials dealing with this in on a continuous basis and trying to get uniformity. But as a matter of fact, the AG is of the opinion that the only solution to this problem is a computer-based system eliminating the human factor in interpretation completely. So I want to say that based on what the AG told us and what the department is now saying they are doing to address this problem, the likelihood is that we will again next year sit again with the same problem and findings. I want comment on the AG stance that this must be computerized and taken away from the human factor in order to solve this issue. Madam Acting Chair, in respect of the overcrowding, the Minister didn't have a chance to answer, so I'll again repeat the question here. The fact is that the percentage-wise, overcrowding over the last 3 years has increased from 29 to 31 to 34%. And I hear what the department is saying in respect of a change in the PPP model, but the reality is also that going back, there was department-driven projects, both in terms of new facilities and in terms of extension to facilities, which seems to also be on ice, or I don't know, Van Reinsdorp, for example, has been forever reported to us at as at a stage of being virtually completed. In the APP of this year, it was envisioned that 6,700 additional spaces would be created, and if that only half of that materialized, indeed, the percentage of overcrowding would have decreased rather than increased. But the reality is that nothing ever gets added. So I think we are really in need of another answer, other than we're looking towards a different model of public-private partnerships. The issue is, what is the department itself, in conjunction with Public Works, doing to complete those projects that, according to previous reports, were nearing completion? And I also want to comment on the issue of the increase in the number of escapes this year, and whether why we must not link that to the increase in overcrowding ultimately. Madam Chair, there's also the issue of vacancies. 3 years ago, the department, and I think at that stage it was seen as a fairly good performance, stood at with a vacancy rate of only 5%, but now for the last 2 years, we're in the region of 9%. And we all know that it, on the one hand, relates to those people providing social services and medical services, which is of a concern, but simultaneously there's also, on senior level, the CDC HR and the regional commissioners for the LMN region and Gauteng, which, according to our last information, was vacant position. And previously the department, when they briefed us, said they would embark on a very focused strategy to at least fill these, as many as possible of these funded vacant positions. And now we're still sitting with a 9% vacancy rate, which must impact on service delivery. Thank you.
Thanks, Chairperson, and thanks for the presentation. Chairperson, I wanted to talk about what Honourable Tony actually touched on, the issue of the computer system. I wanted to check the integrated inmate management system. Does it serve what we want? And if so, is it, according to the department, the way to go? As it is obviously being operated somewhere, does it seem to be giving us answers to what we seem to be making? And the other thing I wanted to check, we are in a stage where we're experiencing budget cuts across government. So I wanted to check where the department is. If we get other budget cuts, how do you see this affecting us vis-a-vis how we performed now? Are we likely to get worse results? And lastly, in no uncertain terms, can you just tell us what you want us as a committee to assist with, given the situation that you find yourself in? Thank you.
Mr. Chairperson, I want to welcome the presentation from the department, and to say that it's really encouraging to see you having now performance indicators. But they should actually also be linked up to consequence management in order for us to know that it's a system that will actually work for us. We've come a long way. And one thing that is important is to just indicate, in terms of consequence management, exactly what needs to be done, because I heard you talking about something that was signed in terms of instance management, but I thought instance management should be such that it talks to the outcomes of performance assessment based on the indicators. Be they electronic or manual? Because I hear there's a sentiment that they need to be electronic, which could actually either promote reliability or not. Also, what you need to link up this moving forward is the whole issue of skills development within the department. So that at the end of the day, we know that the kind of demands that we put can be met, because there is necessary skills that is available to deal with the demands. Also, what I would be interested in is whether you do actually also comply with the Employment Equity Act. Nothing has actually been said about Employment Equity Act and the department's compliance with Employment Equity Act. And this is the kind of information that we will want to know moving into the future, as to whether you are really compliant in terms of representation of women, representation of disabled people. And about disabled people, what we hear from some of the departments that have actually brought, and maybe even private business that has brought people with disabilities in, some bring disabled people in, but they don't make special provision to make it possible for them to carry out their tasks. It's things that needs to be looked at as you come up with such measures to ensure that you do comply with Employment Equity Act. And then you have indicated that you also have the audit action plan. I'm not sure whether it's only external audit action plan outcome, audit outcome action plan, whether it's both internal and external, and whether and I don't get a sense as to how it's actually dealt with and monitored outside to understand that. Thanks.
Thank you so much. May I also comment on five bunker system in terms of overcrowding and maybe staff inmate ratio, and how this might have a negative impact on the well-being of inmates, and whether it complies with the international standards or not. I'm aware that overcrowding, National Commissioner, is not only Department of Correctional Services, baby. It's unfortunate that the DCS finds itself in the receiving end. So, you made mention that Johannesburg and Pretoria is very overcrowded. Yeah, are you talking about Kumasi? Yes. So, maybe if you can share light in terms of what is really happening there. Okay. And the issue of the 6 DPS you touched on. If you can just share light with us. Thank you so much.
There are a few things I just wanted to check. It would have been lovely if you, for example, on page 7 of the presentation by the to give some explanation. You said insufficient evidence of validity of the book. Reported performance information at the hospital. This is what they found. But is there an explanation for that? Why should there be such and there is an adverse opinion. First of all, before I hit it, I must congratulate for the good work that there is this that we have got a report, a very good report from the OECD. I wanted to say that. Thank you very much. I was saying that as you were giving the report, that I was keen to get to know you properly. This is the reason why there is such a thing. There is no such an explanation. You just read what we saw here and did not, you know, give some indication as to why there is such a thing and what put you in such a situation. Secondly, I would like to know that in this study, what is your the percentage of your of the number of people of them to be vacant. I'm aware that in the same case is around 700, for example, inside about 200. You have been complaining that there is a lot of overcrowding. And yet, the system, you remember, I complained about the question of the system of the number of workers at a particular time that are at work. It is not a danger to the workers. To the workers. You probably have quite a number of inmates, particularly when you've got the overcrowding and you've got very few members looking after these many dangerous, in particular, inmates. Your system of allocation of the work, coupled with the question that there is a lot of vacancies and there's a lot of you are overcrowded. What is your system of trying to assist in that regard? I'm really getting worried because you have already said that the staff is demoralized by this, and yet you the people at a particular time. So remember the other time I raised it. At a particular time, how many members looking after how many inmates? Can if you can just clarify on that particular point, I think. With the finance, I think it's only after the finance happens or the finance man can I mean, just those points. If I could get an answer on that, that would be great. Thank you.
Chairperson, thank you again for the opportunity. I would try to respond to issues raised, and then I also request colleagues to add on. Chairperson, the manual system of collecting information that we are currently using is what causes most of our problems. But also that goes with your business processes that are not explained clearly for a person in Springbok to have the same understanding as an official at Mamaki, for instance. So the understanding of the technical descriptor indicator as well as how we arrive at a calculation is what causes the AG to come out and say, but the information that you provide to us is not reliable, it's not useful. And our aim is to have a system that could be utilized. utilized by all correctional facilities, including your area office, your regional office, and head office, so that we are able to zoom into performance, zoom into the number of people that we have at head office, and thereby develop it in such a manner that at a click of a button, if it is wrong information, it will go back. But if it's the right information, then it will be much easier for us to follow. So we have, as part of our plan, indicated that the integrated inmate management system, which is an IJS project that was intended for correctional services to be in line with the other IJS partners, so that information that the police is having, that our courts are having, prosecuting is having, we can also tap on and utilize. That is why we have developed this inmate management system. And therefore, if we implement it throughout the country, it will provide us with a single view of what happens when an offender is admitted at any of our facilities. We then also went further to develop your enterprise architecture that would talk to the business processes within correctional services. When a person is admitted, the following activities have to be undertaken, so that if the Auditor General come and check, did this person attend social work programs? By getting into the system in head office, in a region, at the center, we'll then be able to extract that information. But what is important is it would then be information that is consistent through all the levels, from correctional center level to area to region to head office. And we are not having that. Secondly, we have a challenge of records management in our facility, that not proper records are being captured and they're being stored, so that when the Auditor General takes our performance information that we provide to the committee to say, this is what you say you have performed the last two quarters, that report, when they go and question our officials at Hoedvlei, for instance, or at Groenpen, then the officials are not able to substantiate what they have provided to the regional office with the records. So that's where the problem, that's where the reliability is. So we believe that the IMS project is going to assist us in that regard. Secondly, Chairperson, maybe coming to the issue that is raised with regard to overcrowding. Indeed, our facilities are overcrowded, and indeed, we are not able to build us ourselves out of this situation. We have had contracts that have not been seen to their conclusion, and we have had problems as a department. Unfortunately, Correctional Services did not have its own project manager within the department, and we have been relying alone on the National Department of Public Works. We have addressed that situation. We have now appointed our own project managers in each and every region. So we put up a project there. We expect our project manager to be informing us on a regular basis as to the milestone that are indicated and as to how the contract is moving. It is correct that we have been coming with Brandvlei, coming with Van Renzo, coming with Zanin, coming with CIMEC. We can today announce here that with CIMEC now, there's a contractor on site that is going to complete that work. In Zanin, an appointment should be done very soon. We believe in a matter of a week, it can be done. Van Rensdorp has been completed, and as well as Brandvlei. What we are having as a challenge, though, with Van Rensdorp and Brandvlei, is that because we have extended the accommodation to more than twofold, we now need staff who can operate in those institutions. And it has been prioritized as one of those key areas where we have to provide staff so that we are able to utilize those facilities to their capacity. The PPP, it was a decision that was taken by the executive together with the leadership of correctional services then, and also the portfolio committee then, to say the current PPPs are being operated at very high cost, because apart from providing the building, the company that got the award was also operating that on behalf of correctional services, or on behalf of the state. What we want to do is, we are looking at this hybrid of putting up a facility for us, but correctional services and the state being the ones that operate, so that we are then able to reduce that expenditure that we have been experiencing. That also is what we are planning with Public Works, because we also need offices, community correction offices, as well as a new head office to look into, and very soon, myself, Digit Labantu, and the two ministers will meet to take a final decision. That we will come back to portfolio committee to say, this is what we intend to do. Please take note and advise, because when the six PPPs were cancelled, the portfolio committee then was also instrumental in coming to that final decision. Chairperson, what is important for us is the portfolio committee on correctional services and justice. We would like to make you aware of what are the challenges that we face, and these challenges, how can you help us to raise them at appropriate levels so that they are then attended to. We have a backlog, Chairperson and members, on accommodation. We need urgently 30,000 bed facility. So we will have to come up with a maintenance and build program, which we have submitted to Minister Masuta, which I think it would also be appropriate that we provide it to you, that you are also informed of what is it that we intend to do. Because we have these very small facilities that are accommodating less than 100. We have a lot of them in the Eastern Cape, Free State, as well as in the Western Cape. We want to increase them to have a minimum total of 500 offenders, because it is not economical for us to have a facility that has 60 offenders and then we have 48 officials. It does not make sense. And therefore, we want to see how we can extend that accommodation. Minister referred earlier during his budget vote that we want to see whether some of the work can be done by our offenders and officials, because in the past they used to build prisons. So we are going to also finalize that on a service level agreement, because Public Works will then be able to provide an overseeing role, so as to ensure that whatever we put in place, we build or we renovate, it should be done in accordance to the standards of building. Chairperson, the staff and inmate ratio, I think we'll provide that. There is, however, a problem with the manner in which we calculate it, because according to National Treasury, they look at the entire correctional services staff, whether you're working in an office or you're working in a facility, as against the entire offender population. Now, we have officials who are dedicated to work as administrative staff. That is why it was approved that we can now start to appoint people on Public Service Act instead of Correctional Services Act, and only have those that work with offenders being appointed under the Correctional Services Act. That also has brought about a huge challenge for us to manage, because the more officials you classify as those that work in administration, which we call non-center-based, the less people you are going to have at your correctional center, which is your center-based. So there is this division now in our facilities throughout the country. But what worsens this situation, Chairperson, is us not finalizing the shift pattern that Honorable Mpumlwana is referring to, where you have officials that start to work on Tuesday, Thursday the other shift goes off, Saturday, Friday, Sunday, and Monday it is only a skeleton staff, half of the staff that's there. And you couple that with absenteeism, you couple that with illness, then you have a problem again. So, to be straight and accurate, Chairperson, there are times when you have offenders more than triple the number that you are supposed to be having, being guarded and looked after by very few officials. That's a picture that happens in all of our facilities, Chairperson. And that is where we would like the portfolio committee also to come in and assist us, because we need, and we have also, again, Chairperson, I must admit, promised to bring to the portfolio committee a finalized organizational structure of correctional services, which will put us at 62,000. The problem of the structure is it is at executive level, where it needs to be finalized and finally approved by Minister Masuta. But there are some processes that he is still not happy with, because you can't have an organizational structure which is not informed by strategy first, but secondly, also by business processes. How many people will you need to do a particular function? So those are the areas that we should be providing to you to assist us. And I can safely say that within a very short period of time, hopefully in the course of this month, Minister Masuta will come and present to you our organizational structure, which we understand that there are budgetary constraints in our country, there is no money. And therefore, if we are going to increase our establishment, we shall have to do it on our own, from our own baseline. And as we do that, Chairperson, we will have to do it in phases. Say, for instance, per year you increase by 4,000, depending on how much you can afford and so forth. And this will maybe, because I see the inspecting judge is here, he's going to raise it that we have promised them positions, which National Treasury has put on record that correctional services, you shall give to the inspecting judge so many positions. What we are doing is we take that from the baseline of correctional services. National Treasury did not give us any extra cent to give, to say, fund this position. So as we experience service terminations, we take those that money and then we fund positions in the inspecting judge and also in correctional services as the case is. Chairperson, the committee is quite correct to say the vacancy level has gone up. It was at 5, it is going up close to 10 now as a result of service termination that the entire public service in the Republic of South Africa has been experiencing. People with longer service, about to retire maybe 2-3 years, have taken their money because there were these fears that were created, these perceptions that the government employees pension fund is going, money is going to be utilized for other things, and therefore people said, no, let's take our money while they are still there. So we have experienced that serious service termination, especially at your level 6, level 7, level 8, senior people who have been in the department. We have lost that experience, Chairperson. We're currently working on a policy that would enable us, where we have a need to maybe approach these people to re-employ, as if they would be cheaper than having to take people from scratch. We would therefore have to balance that with our intakes for new people, but also with our learnership. Chairperson, I do think that I have responded to most of the questions. I would like the CDC strategic management to also respond on those that I may have missed. I may come back, Chairperson.
Thanks, Commissioner. I just wanted to respond to the one about the consequences and the upskilling. From the actual management of performance information and the nominated individuals, we have conducted training workshops with regards to the performance indicators and the technical indicator descriptions as to the requirements and what must be done in terms of calculating and reporting. So, but that is obviously something that we have to do on an ongoing basis. The first session we conducted it in April, And now, I think over the next 2 weeks or so, we are going to embark on actually going to the regions and bolstering that support. The other side of the consequences is that from a center level, the head of the correctional center would be responsible for all the performance information within their specific center. So that information that is being reported to a management end must be signed off by the head of correctional center to say that they have reviewed it and they are happy with the content. And that is linked to the content of a performance agreement, which says that now if there are issues with that and the criteria for performance against that, then there will be, in terms of the assessment of performance on an annual basis, there will be consequences in that regard. So I think that was the main one out of the question.
Do you have any tools? Any tools? Electronic tools for performance measurement?
In terms of the management of performance information, we don't have an electronic tool at the moment. But as I indicated, that the integrated inmate management system will address that gradually. Yeah.
Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. There are two questions that I missed. The one question was by Honorable Maimila. The budget cuts that have been announced, how are they going to affect us as correctional services? Chairperson, having looked at our situation and having effected budget cuts that were announced, we have come to a point where certain projects will have to be stopped. We are going to see what we can do with regard to programs, and especially those that deal with rehabilitation of offenders and skills development. But there are those that we are going to have to stop, otherwise we are not going to be able to see the airport. And yes, Chair, it is going to affect our performance at the end of the financial year. So what I think CDC strategic and CDC finance, therefore, we will have to indicate to the committee the impact of the budgetary cuts and constraints. Why? Because the committee should be made aware as to which projects are we going to stop, which projects are we going to maybe phase out, maybe implement in a year or two. Definitely it's going to affect us. Secondly, with regard to skill development and employee health and wellness, we have cut on a number of these programs of skill development because of the budgetary cuts. We have prioritized three issues in correctional services. It is to provide food and shelter for offenders, to provide medicine for offenders, and to pay salaries. Those are our main three priorities. So everything that we do needs to then be informed of what happens with these three. We would like to have a situation where offenders are rioting and causing problems for us, where they don't have food and medication. That we are going to provide checklist. And then the Honorable Mr. Maila also asked about the employment equity plan. We will provide the status and the department's own equity plan to the committee. But we have taken a decision because we do not impact so much on people with disabilities, that we have placed an advert out that talks to people with disabilities, encouraging them to apply. We are struggling to meet the target that has been set for the public service, largely because correctional facilities, we're working with people that have offended society, but we believe we can utilize them at the regional office and at our national head office. So we are doing that. But also what we're looking at is to make all our facilities, I think we have gone to great lengths to ensure that they are accessible for people with disabilities. We do not have modified our lifts so that when they enter into the lift, they can read by braille what is there, what lift, what number they should go to. We currently have started in the national head office, and we move out to the other outlying areas as well. Chairperson, the Correctional Services has developed an audit action plan on its, of its own to address the issues and areas that the AG has indicated to us. With that, we also have an internal audit plan and a services evaluation plan, which aims at ensuring that our work is up to standard, standard operating procedures have been followed, and that it is quality work, actually cleaning before the sweeper arrives. So we're trying to inculcate that in our way of work so that people should know. You don't accept anything that has not been tested for correctness and tested for reliability. And therefore, the internal audit, which has been a very weak unit in correctional services, must come to its full utilization. And it will also then simplify and make the work of the Auditor General very easy. Because all the work that we are doing would then have been audited, and we would have received a certification in that regard. We are putting all efforts to ensure that at the regional level we have internal auditors whose work primarily is to ensure and effect internal control. And we believe once we have that governance structure in place, Chairperson, Correctional Services would then be in a year or two be able to achieve a very clean audit report, audit opinion. And once we have strengthened that with the help of oversight bodies like yourself, we will then be able to achieve a clean audit. Chairperson, I think, yes, we have done all of that.
Commissioner, I'm just concerned about three priorities that you mentioned: food, shelter, and medicine. Now, I'm just wondering whether we should not be involved in that prioritization, maybe also with the ministry. Because if the purpose of correctional centers is to rehabilitate these young people that are there so that they are returned to community as useful and productive citizens, whether we would achieve that purpose by just giving them good food, good shelter, and medicine. When in fact out there the outcry is that you know these correctional centers are five-star hotels and the young people prefer to be inside than outside because it's nicer there. So maybe we need to engage and just look at the priorities and also the cuts because we don't believe that those cuts must just be arbitrary cuts without taking into account the correctional policy. So you don't need to respond. I think we can engage on that.
Well, thank you very much, Chairperson. Over to you, CFO.
Chairperson, thank you for the opportunity. I just want to indicate that the presentation for the in terms of the expenditure for 15-16 was made on the 23rd of August. In the previous at this committee, so I'll just summarize on slide 92 because it was consistent with what was presented on the annual report. Just if you allow me to just summarize the same report. As indicated, I think just to start to say on slide 92. As a department, we were originally provided a budget of 20.6 million, but there was a cut of 30 million on compensation during the adjustment budget in October because of the vacancy rate that we had. However, the committee should note that normally we've been funding our pressures from compensation because there are certain items that have not been provided for originally on the baseline, which continues to be an inflationary pressure or budgetary pressure on our side. And I just mentioned the three. Fleet costs for us is quite high, and we can't manage to absorb those. And fleet costs in this regard is relating to the cost driver there is mainly on transportation of remand detainees to court on a daily basis. So that's one area. The second area, obviously, is the inflation on food is much higher than what the budget processes of Treasury allow for, because it's always food inflation is always higher than what we are given. And the third other pressure is on water and electricity. We are in this current financial year, for example, we've been given 860 million, but our needs far exceeds that. It's at 1.3 billion. So every year we have to, with the vacancy rate, we've always been moving funds from compensation, savings, to fund this in the main, these three areas. And this is catching up with us because we've been getting, as the Honorable Chairperson indicated, arbitrary cuts. In this current financial year, we've got a 281 million cut, which we can't fund anywhere else. And we are looking at we are in the red, actually, as we sit now as a project. But in relation to slide 92, I wanted to give that context so that the committee understands that as much as we also got an unauthorized expenditure of 121,000 represented there in terms of the overs and under expenditure, in the during the at the end of the financial year, it was the end of the financial year, we had to hold back two invoices for municipal services for Feb and March, which amounted to just close to 200 million. Because we couldn't pay for it because we didn't have money. And these are the pressures that we are experiencing at the department, which has actually spilled through now into this current financial year, where expenditure relating to 15-16 was deferred and paid in this current financial year, putting a strain into the budget. And unfortunately, water and electricity is not something that, as a department, we have a choice. But we have to utilize water for basic necessities of offenders and so forth. So that's the picture that we have for 15-16. On slide 94, we just explained why classification, for instance, compensation of employees. There was a cut of 30 million during the adjustment budget, whereas there was also a resolution taken at the PSCBC regarding medical aid contributions that has led to, obviously, over expenditure of 34 million. On slide 95, we then deal with the goods and services, where the 8 million, we've overspent by 8 million due to municipal services, but excluded in that 8 million is the fact that we held back two invoices for February and March, which would have made us spend more. On interest, that those relate to interest paid on area salary, whereas on transfers and subsidies was mainly the underspending of 12 million as a result of lower than anticipated leave gratuity of service termination, as well as the delayed payment of the skills development expenses. The last one was underspending of 32 million on capital assets relating to farming and workshop equipment at various regions and survey equipment. That's the picture that we have at the end of the financial year in terms of budget utilization. But just to indicate to the committee, the pressure still exists, and we are continuing to get further cuts. And perhaps maybe just to add an extraordinary one which has been delayed by the department over the years is the implementation of the occupational specific dispensation regime for the correctional officials, which will at the end of the day the department is in negotiations with labor so that it gets implemented. It has been delayed for a while, but that on its own is also going to obviously wipe out our savings on compensation, which will then obviously lead to less funds available for additional posts. So from a committee point of view, we just felt that as managers we must raise these issues because the department finds itself in this situation at a time when funding is not available in the country, and yet certain decisions have to be taken to avoid obviously unrest in within the system of correctional services. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. This is a bit of like cold water in the face. I think we were very impressed with the fact that the spending patterns of the department as reflected in the annual report and the financial statements looked very sound. But to now hear that 200 million, as a matter of fact, was deferred, create obviously sketches a whole different picture. So I don't know whether the department can maybe just inform us as to whether they've had any engagements with Treasury on this, on the one hand, and on the other hand, you know, while sitting and listening here, I also thought to myself, and I know it will be difficult in the correctional services environment, but where I come from, water restrictions is also now apply, and now it's been increased by another 30%, and now I'm trying to teach my wife and my children to, while they wait for the shower to warm up, to catch some water in a bucket which can later be used to water the few pot plants or whatever we still have. So what I'm actually coming to is, and I understand it's a difficult thing when you're dealing with people who have no vested interest in saving, but in respect of this escalation in water and electricity accounts, does the department have an action plan for, on the one hand, savings, and on the other hand, possibly looking into alternative sources? For example, solar power and that type of thing, and on the other hand, boreholes and so on the at the facilities of the department itself, because in the environment we're living in, there's no way that these cost drivers is going to stop escalating. Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. Yeah, myself also, I was just quite worried about your bill for water and electricity. Which you're actually saying that for the record you have actually spent 860 million, but in actual fact it's supposed to be something like 1.3 billion. A lot of money. And indeed, I think we need to look at alternative energy sources and some other ways of actually trying to reduce it. It's quite huge. We understand that there's got to be water used in correctional centers and energy, but if it comes to this amount of money, can run the whole city, I think. So let's look at what are the areas that you can put cuts on. Even thinking of areas that, you know, if you put prepaid meters, it will help people to know that they should monitor how much of electricity that they are using, knowing that if electricity gets finished, it's not going to create a crisis. I think there's got to be some kind of a strategy that you come up with that will actually deal with this area of work. And in terms of fleet costs, because you said fleet costs also are one of the areas that are problematic. You didn't actually indicate earlier as to, you know, fleet management strategy. I think maybe in the future, if you don't have that information now, you need to indicate as to how you do fleet management, whether the, you know, vehicles have got tracking systems and what is the type of policy you've got, to be sure that even in that area, you reduce costs. And then I'm happy we're not actually, you haven't mentioned anything about lease costs. Are we now owning the buildings? Because previously this is one of the areas we worried about. We're paying a lot of money on leasing some of the buildings. And if that is the case, I must actually congratulate you for having managed to work on this successfully. And Commissioner, you talked about your restructuring process. And at some stage you mentioned something like there was a center that has got 60 inmates with 40 personnel. And I'm just interested to understand, because, you know, I think also what is important is when you think of restructuring, you should actually also, and you've mentioned a little bit of it, that you will rationalize. So at the end of the day, every staff member that is available in correctional services manages to put value in the system, so that the amount of money is, and it's too much of money that is allocated, 20 billion is a lot of money. The money that we've got, we should actually manage to get value for it at the end of the day. So it will be good moving forward to understand whether you've actually embarked on these processes, matching the skills with the demands also. So that at the end of the day, we are saying we've got these demands. These are the skills in a form of so many warm bodies in a particular area. And of course, taking into consideration the challenge about, I don't know how far you're working on it, appointment of staff. That if they're appointed according to the Public Service Act and Correctional Services Act, it becomes a challenge as to how you place them. And that's why in some areas you'll find that you have lesser number of staff according to the requirement. If you can indicate as to whether there's any action that is being taken along those lines. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you, Chairperson. I think the CFO will talk on the spending plan and engagement with National Treasury. But indeed, we're looking at how we can save costs. One of the problems that our facilities management has been experiencing was to just pay a bill from municipalities as we receive them. And municipalities have been charging us on estimates. Now, the facilities management team has actually gone to municipalities to demand actual readings and actual billing so that they can then be able to pay. The Chief Director responsible for facilities management has already indicated to us that we have just been paying as we receive without questioning the authenticity of the bill. So we currently deal with that, and also to look at how we can save. We're trying to look at what kind of machinery we can put up at our facility with our water as well as electricity. Water especially, because the offenders use most of the water for their own purposes to wash and clean themselves and as well as their clothing. But a lot of water gets lost through leaking pipes and so forth. So it has also been prioritized as an area that we are going to have to look at with the National Department of Public Works. We should be able to provide the community with our fleet cost management and the strategy, as well as what are our lease costs. I think CFO might be able to respond to, but we can provide accurate information in that regard. Chairperson and members, we have, as a department, taken a decision that we're not going to have any correctional facility that has less than 500 offenders, so as to be able to have officials that are able to really be utilized properly and gainfully employed by the department so that people do their work and the offenders are rehabilitated. So we have started with that process. All of the prisons that are prioritized for that program, we can also provide to the committee list thereof so that as members back in their regions, you can also just have a look as to where this has been the case. The one facility that we have upgraded now is Standerton in Mpumalanga. From a facility that only held 100, we are now moving towards 1,200 offenders. So we're trying to do that as part of our strategy to increase our own accommodation. And that would also, at the end of the day, determine how you staff your institution so that you are able to utilize the officials for the work that they intended. The Public Service Act appointments are very needy and are actually correct, but at a center, we have a problem that we can't utilize them inside the facility. So at a center, we would have to have people that are appointed in terms of correctional services and because they have to work with offenders. But we can also provide a breakdown of how many are on public service, where are they utilized, as well as those that are appointed in terms of the correctional services. CFO, I think you can conclude with that.
Thank you. With respect to
My question around the Public Service Act and the Correctional Service Act appointees was whether this is a problem in terms of placement of personnel in certain areas. And if it's a problem, is there a strategy of dealing with that so that the problem can be sorted out?
I wanted to the question by Honourable Hon regarding the whether we've engaged Treasury. Yes, we've engaged National Treasury regarding the for the purposes of the 20 next year's MCAS process. But I think we have already, as a department, said we are exploring alternative resources such as renewable energy. We've signed a memorandum of understanding with the Department of Energy so that we can be utilized as a pilot in some of the sustainable energy projects. But our concern is from a financial management point of view, the benefits of those projects will be medium to long term. And we need funding now, which can then obviously be reduced over on the outer years of the medium term. I think that's what I wanted to just to address, that some of these needs are now not necessarily for a long term period.
very much for steering the ship so well.
Professor?
Father Vestage.
This must be a punishing experience.
You have been sitting here listening, but I guess from your other life, you are used to this long sitting. We apologize for that.
Thank you, Chair. Yes, I'm used to listening. Fortunately, in this case, when I do not have to take a decision or write a judgment at the end of listening. I will just leave the problems to be solved by those who raised them in the first place. Thank you very much. It is an honor to be present. I will be very, very brief and then hand over to the acting CEO, Mr. Masondo, who is here with the team from our office on the different aspects. I'm actually running out of time for excuses, but perhaps this is one of my last excuses, and that is that this particular report that was tabled, of course, deals with the period before I was appointed. So, I cannot speak meaningfully to the contents of the report. It will be, Mr. Masondo will explain it and questions can be answered. My only involvement in this particular report was the foreword that I wrote, and I'm not sure which copy you have available, but if you have the color copy, I see there is some activity behind us. I've only been involved in the foreword and the front page. And the reason why I mention it is that one of the things we've decided to do since my appointment, also in consultation with the Minister and Deputy Minister, is to have a higher profile. Part of that perhaps is to make reports a little bit more exciting and interesting as far as its presentation is concerned. The reason why I mention it is simply that we are planning to have a higher public profile in consultation with the Minister and Deputy Minister, and we started in a small way by trying to make at least the front page a little bit more exciting. I suppose you cannot remember what the previous reports looked like, and perhaps that is because they were not very exciting as far as the images are concerned. Part of the idea of a higher public profile is that we intend to work more closely with the media. We will do that with the necessary responsibility. But to the extent that our office has been frustrated by the fact that the department does not always respond to reports and requests, we are intending to take a slightly tougher line and not like has been happening over the past year and a half, wait for a report for almost 2 years on something as serious as an assault, which could well amount to murder. We will, before the end of this year, perhaps late in November, have two events which we are planning. And these two events, which may be in the Western Cape and in the Free State, we plan to, in a way, unveil a corporate identity, perhaps a new logo. The one at the bottom of the front page is a first step. It is slightly experimental at the moment. We are still looking at different combinations and colors and so on. So we would like to make ourselves more known to the public in the process of educating the public, not only about the fate of inmates, but also the very difficult job of members of the department. The two events we are considering to have, one would have topics apart from publicizing ourselves and our identity. We are considering the one to have the topic of overcrowding and the other one torture, which to my surprise, unpleasant surprise, has been happening more than I thought. And you will know about that. The commissioner, national commissioner, has been very warm and supportive in my little bit of interaction with him. there seems to be something which he just mentioned now on which we keep misunderstanding each other, and that is the fact that the minister in the budget speech announced that JICS had 42 new positions, and everybody was very happy about it that day in Parliament, including I, who was just appointed a few days earlier. Later on, it was explained to us that actually these positions are not new, that it is DTS's money, and that they will decide which positions they can do without and therefore make available to us. We were not happy with that situation. Treasury supported our understanding, and the minister himself was completely unaware that that would be the position. The minister's explanation was that he actually got the detail from the department or from the commissioner. However, Commissioner Modise has now allocated another person in the Human Resources Department, and we are in the process of filling at least half of those positions and advertising the others very, very soon. I was not going to mention that, but seeing that the commissioner has mentioned it. So I think the way I see our task is that we are looking after the dignity of inmates, the dignity of those who work with them, and therefore ultimately the dignity of all of us. We have been hearing for many years that human rights are interrelated and interdependent, so I do not think any of us can walk around with our human dignity intact, knowing that circumstances inside our centers violate the dignity of people to the extent that it does not have to be violated, given, of course, that to be incarcerated necessarily has an impact on one's rights, especially your freedom. With those few introductory words, and again steering away from the contents of the report, perhaps conveniently, I hand over to Mr. Masondo, and he will address us. Thank you. I think Mr. Masondo must come closer. I actually can't see there in the dark where he is at the moment. That window behind you there blinds me, so I cannot really see. Thank you. I just want to say that I hear the chair keeps on addressing me as a professor, and I take that to mean that he respects professors more than judges.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. Thank you very much, Chairperson. I guess to me, sitting there far, it was on the issue that only the elite that are sitting closer to the Chairperson. So the rank and file, you are just like me, you should be far. Just on a lighter note. Chairperson and honorable members of Portfolio Committee and Inspecting Judge, the National Commissioner in his absence now, colleagues. Our presentation on the 26th of September covered a lot of ground in terms of what we are going to present in this report. So I'll be able to not to touch some of the slides solemnly because of that issue. Of course, if you look into, I guess you do have the presentation with you. Into page 2 of my presentation, it talks about the purpose of the presentation. What I will be covering is the 2015-2016 performance information from the first quarter up until to the last quarter, for quarter number four. Administration report on human resources and financial resources, the state of correctional centers, inspections and investigations, and mandatory reporting, complaints, stakeholders engagement, and research. And in relation to mandates, I'm not going to cover mandates because we all know now. I don't want to sound like a stuck record. Then we'll go to page four. That deals with our strategic objectives. Our strategic objective is as follows: to provide effective independent oversight relating to the treatment of inmates and the condition in correctional center and triple P. And in terms of our strategic indicator number one, deal with percentage of correctional facilities and triple P facilities inspected on the conditions and the treatment of inmates. Then I'll quickly jump to the year 2014-2015, whereby our target, it was 91 out of the 243 correctional centers that we are having. We managed to reach this target in this year, in 2014-2015. And currently in 2015-2016, our target was 102, and also we have reached this target, because now we are in the 2016-2017, but I'm just reporting the previous year. Quickly, if I can also say that why our target is this low, because of the capacity that we are having. We don't have enough capacity, so we don't want to bite more than what we can chew. So we have to bite what we can chew. But if we can look into this report, in 2017 and 2018, we can see that our target has moved up, and also in 2019-2018, we intend to inspect all the prisons. We envisage that by that time, we'll be having full capacity in terms of the people who will be inspecting. Quickly, if I can just state here, maybe I'll also go into state in the coming slides, that most of the targets that are low are also due to the fact, especially on inspection, are also due to the fact that according to our structure, we only have four inspectors nationally, and three of them are on are on contract, which their contract has come to an end it was last month, end of last month. But we are in the process of appointing them permanent. We have advertised positions, as Judge has just alluded, and it's my responsibility in terms of Section 89, Subsection 1, that I should do the appointment. We have appointed so far 20, and they are going to start or to commence on the 1st of November. Okay, can I quickly jump now to quarter one, that is from April to June 2015. Our target was 20, and we managed to reach this 20. And in relation to the percentages of correctional facilities inspected, then in relation to the percentages of unnatural death report, here we have to target 100, because whatever report that we get, we have to analyze them. Even if it can be 10, 5, 1, so we have to analyze them. But in that, it's called a pilot. We did not receive any. Then when you go to page 7, our target on the quarter 2 was 21, and we managed to reach it. And in relation to the unnatural death report, we have received 28, and we have managed to analyze the whole 28. That's why you said 100%. Then when we quickly go to page 9, on quarter three, that is from October to December 2015, our target was 20, and we managed to reach 10. The reason being that most of the contract workers came to an end also during that period. The same period as now. With this month, I guess our target will go a little bit down, not unless we'll be able to increase the number when they start next month. Then I'm so sorry that I'm rushing. I guess they're copying me. I'm not. Okay. Then on quarter four, which is page 11, on quarter four, from January to March 2016, our target is 20, and we managed to reach 30. The 10 is to replace the previous quarter where we have only reached 10. So remember, in the previous quarter, our target was 20. So then for this year that we are reporting, then we managed to cover the whole of the annual target. Then quickly on page 12, on post-establishment, we have 43 filled posts on our post-establishment and one vacant post, which is the post of CEO. Then also, I'm not going to talk much on the post of 42. It has been said. And when you go to the before I can go further, I just want to applaud the department in terms of assisting us, especially on this one, advertising, and also unfortunately that Mr. Koza is not here. He was so instrumental in terms of assisting us. And also, I don't know whether I have to mention that, or maybe it's because of he was my former boss, I don't know. Maybe that was that relationship between me and him. But he also promised that he will make it a point that these positions are placed on paper. So when we come to the ICCVs, we have 217 home bodies ICCVs out of 310. And also we have 9 correctional centers that are under renovation. Then when it comes to budget, we were given the budget of 47,016,000, and it was increased by 1,354,000, and the total budget was 48,370,000. And in compensation, we have 39,457,000. On goods and services, 7,294,000. Then on capital expenditure is 1,619,000. We have a finance person here if there are any other questions in this regard, then we'll be able to give an answer. Then when we come to the the state of the correctional center, page 14. Then there is a table there that shows that the population in our correctional center. If you can look into that table, especially in 2016, you will see that the population has risen up. We have 161,779 people that are incarcerated. And you can see that in terms of the remand detainees, that's about 40,000, and the more of them is the sentence in me. Then when we come to page 15, that talks about the investigation and inspection. Main finding from inspections is overcrowding, as it has been said here in the house, and I cannot elaborate more. The issue around safe custody for staff, and deteriorating infrastructure, inadequate access of inmates relating to exercise, their nutrition, rehabilitation program, and healthcare. Shortages of healthcare professionals. Then when you come to the inspections, the diagram there shows the number of inspections conducted per region, and the line below that is the number of centers that we have inspected. I guess that is self-explanatory. I cannot go further. And also, when you come to the mandatory, as it was also stated on the 26th September, that it is mandatory that the department should report on the following, that is death in terms of Section 15, and segregation in terms of Section 30, and mechanical restraint in terms of Section 31, and also the use of force in terms of Section 32. During 2015-2016, the following mandatory report were included. That is 619 reports of the use of force and 573 reports of death and 315 reports on use of mechanical restraint and 12,678 reports on segregation. Then when you people go to page 18, that relates to the complaints management system, that in terms of the provision of Section 21, Subsection 1, raped with the correctional regulation. Every inmate must, on admission and on a daily basis, be given an opportunity to make a complaint or a request to the head of the correctional center or to the correctional officials. So in this fiscal year under review, ICCVs and complaints unit interacted with about 456 and 994 inmates in relation to their complaints and all the issues in relation to interviews and so forth. Then we have noted a sharp decline of inmates on inmate assault, while 811 complaints have been received for the assault by officials on inmates. Then when you go to page 19, that talks about the prevalent complaints. The prevalent complaints that we are receiving is about transfer. But you find that inmates are complaining that a certain center is overcrowded and they want to go out to another center, and also they want to be closer to their families. An inmate who is in Joburg and the family is here in Cape Town, he wants to be transferred, and also in relation to the rehabilitation program. You find that in some of the centers, they don't have rehabilitation programs, and the inmate wants to undergo certain rehabilitation programs, and he will request that he should be transferred to whatever center where he will get such a rehabilitation program. Then in terms of the healthcare complaints, we have 7,574. Then also we have complaints in relation to appeals, bail, and legal representation complaints. Then quickly, when you go to page 20, in relation to stakeholders' engagement, JICS belongs to the outcome number 3 of the National Development Plan, Vision 2030. Through our VCs, we contribute to outcome number 3, which speaks to the contributing safer society. In order to give effect to this outcome, the inspectorate participated in various community meetings which aimed at crime prevention awareness campaign. Then the impact of stakeholders' engagement, amongst others, inter alia, is assisting parolees to ensure employment and also to empower them with skills so that they could be able to be employable and to be self-sufficient. By so doing, we also contribute in terms of keeping the recidivism at this beginning. Then in terms of, now we are in page 21, in relation to health research findings, healthcare is one of the fundamental rights, as we know, that is enshrined in our constitution, that's chapter 2, section 35, section 2, paragraph E. Then the conditions. Conditions in correctional centers regarding healthcare vary from regions to regions and from center to center and also unit to unit. Complaints in this category referred to the broken toilets, showers and windows, limited hot water or no hot water at all, and also a dilapidated infrastructure. Due to high turnover rate of remand detainees, remand units were found to have a very bad health condition and dilapidated infrastructure compared to those occupied by the sentenced offenders. Perhaps the cause here emanate from the constant turnover of remand detainees, contrary or adversely to the relatively stable occupation of sentence offenders. Then in terms of mental illness, a high number of inmates are classified with various mental illness. Most of these inmates are not declared state patients and suffer from various mental illness ranging from major depression to psychosis. 85% of centers inspected by JIPS. Statistics depict that mental illness inmates are usually incarcerated in communal cells. Segregating them increases the chance of self-harm, whereas it is also a challenge to put them in a communal cell as they pose a danger to other inmates and even to DCS officials themselves. As we all know that such people do not have lawyers, they will understand. As we all know that such people do not have lock-up standing if, of course, he or she might injure any other person. If he won't be able to stand in court because of the condition that he finds. Okay, inspection findings further depict that most centers have limited medical facilities and are unable to house the mental ill inmates. Upon interviewing the correctional center nurses, it was depicted that the three most prevalent mental illness are psychosis, depression, and schizophrenia. Then when it comes to page 23, HIV, AIDS, and TB training for ICCV. The prevalence HIV/AIDS in correctional center is believed to be higher than in the broader community. In order to assist with the combating of HIV and TB in correctional centers, JICS and TB and HIV care join hands in providing a training program for ICCVs. The program entails education on the basis on the disease and method of prevention and cure. The ICCVs were educated on the different types of TB, the causes and prevention of TB, the different stages of TB, and how TB and HIV infection can be managed. The training equipped the ICCVs with the knowledge to detect and correctly advise inmates on the treatment of treatment and management of this disease. The total number of 150 ICCVs attended the training. The assessment depicted that 80% of ICCVs gain a vast knowledge of TB and HIV. Then the training improved their ability to accurately report complaints of inmates in this regard. Then in conclusion, which is page 24, I'm done. That is. It must be noted that the limited number of inspections, investigations, inquiries, and research reports from JIC is largely due to capacity and budget constraints. To achieve its mandate and release the effectiveness of JIC, a substantial increase in budget is necessary, and a multidisciplinary approach from the criminal justice sector, that is departments, and also civil society, is needed to ensure the safe custody of all inmates. Chairperson, I've come to the end of my presentation, and thank you very much, Chairperson. Thank you very much, members of the portfolio committee. And thank you very much, Justice.
When you talk about assault by officials, does the opposite not happen? Why don't you tell us about officials who are being assaulted? Why is it the one-way street? And when you talk about mental illness, you know, people trained in the West, psychologists, psychiatrists, classify some things as mental illness, whereas spirit possession people, that needs to be trained as healers. Do you take those things into account? Or is everything or what relationship are you having with the traditional healers, for instance, and how much is your profession understood?
Okay. Quickly, we are not turning a blind eye in terms of the officials accorded by the need. I guess, legal services will dwell much on that. But in relation to the mental illness, of course, I guess we should encourage DCS in terms of inviting such people as sangomas and all traditional healers who can assist in that regard in relation to the mental ill people. Because the only method that they're using is only the Western, the Western one, as you have mentioned, in terms of diagnosing such people.
The majority of the people in the correctional centers are indigenous Africans. Now, are you not missing the point?
Of course, but I think that they won't just off their own and try to practice that, because besides, not unless of course in their structure they do have such a person. What I'm trying to say here is, suppose that a member who is the custodian and he is a sangoma, I don't think it will be allowed to do those rituals to any other inmate who will be maybe suffering from such. I don't want to speak on behalf of this on this issue, but of course it also gives us an opportunity in terms of looking into it, and also maybe to assist in relation to maybe sourcing out from outside.
Of course, they are.
you and I have had many discussions on this topic. But let me start with mental illness now. Let me just ask perhaps Mr. Masonga, but we don't diagnose people, we just get statistics from the department.
Yes, yes.
Yeah, so they tell
that's
us. Who is, I don't know how they determine it. It is not our diagnosis. These are, when we visit, they always give us these, just like they give with any other diseases. What a worrying thing about the mental illness, I see even in this presentation, a considerable number of these people are diagnosed with depression, and that is the circular argument, that the depression gets worse when you're locked up in solitary confinement, for example. In Kokstad, the so-called super maximum facility, where people are in single cells, there is no overcrowding there, because single cells, they are left out of the cell one hour a day or something. From what we understood, virtually everybody there is on antidepressants, and that must certainly get worse. But on the other hand, they regard it as necessary. We will still look into that to separate them. That is why they are there. But that seems to be a self-perpetuating kind of situation where things get worse in the process. As far as the assaults are concerned, yes, the few instances that I've recently encountered, as in fact the previous time we were before you, 2-3 weeks ago, that very same week, we had to pay unannounced visits to Helderström, assault, but it often starts, of course, by inmates on officials, and apparently what I've learned, as I learn as I go along, but one of the methods used by inmates is that they put padlocks, in a sock or at the end of a belt, several of them, and then when officials open or unlock, they assault them by swinging it and hit them over the head with very, very, very serious injuries. However, the problem then is the retribution, the revenge, so to speak. And in that particular case, this assault ended with four people now in hospital, one with two broken legs, another one with one broken leg, another one with a broken jaw and his whole face completely deformed because of the broken jaw. And when you ask to see them, some of the officials say, no, they are very dangerous criminals. They cannot allow us into the cell. But when you get into the cell, the guy can hardly get up from his bed because he has two broken legs and a broken jaw. So I think, and of course what the officials also tell us, they always say it is gang-related. It starts with a gang situation. So in the few that I'm involved in now, we are trying to get to the bottom of that. But I don't think it will easily happen in my experience that an official will, without any reason, just assault an inmate. But once there is provocation, the noodweer, the self-defense, goes far too far. It exceeds all bounds, and sometimes it carries on even to the next day and the day after, etc. So, just on those two points. Thank you.
Judge, that you refer to the idea of self-defense, because if we just say officials assault inmates, it may not be fair, because if they are being assaulted themselves and they defend themselves and then we blame them. So I'm happy that we want to look on both sides.
Now, on relation to, I guess, Professor is the person who's the guru on this part. The department, by law, operation of law, they are given permission in terms of using a necessary force. Should they be attacked, then they can use the necessary force in terms of defending themselves. But in most of the reports that we have gone through on most of the incident, we'll find that an inmate was fighting with another inmate and there's no any other squabble between the two or whatsoever, then they will come, and then after assault, then that one is no more a defense. It's a plain assault. For example, in the issue of Brantley, whereby the inmate used what judges just described, they call it it's a jumba, where they will put something inside and save it and hit, and then he injured an official. Then after everything that took place, then the inmate was fetched from the cell, brought, assaulted, and all these other issues. Then that's something else at all. There's no more self-defense.
This provokes me today, and then it means that if I catch you tomorrow, I cannot deal with you.
Yes, the
provocation has expired.
The law of the country says we mustn't take law into our own hands. So we have recourse in terms of whatever that comes through our way.
Honorable member, there is a report, Honorable Ignon, the man of Mongo,
yeah. Thank you, Chair. I want to ask question firstly on the report of JICS on the issue of the use of force. Now, it's reported to us that the biggest inmate numbers are to be found in Gauteng and then more or less equally in second place Western Cape, KZN, and then Limpopo, Mpumalanga, Northwest, that region, and so on. But then, if you look at use of force, we see a sharp increase from 191 cases to 619 from the previous financial year, and the most cases was found in that LMN region and the Free State. So, to my mind, that must raise questions. So, I just want to know whether JICS indeed investigated this and made findings and reported this to DCS. Then secondly, Chair, in terms of core functions, it is of concern, and I want to know how JICS deals with this. The way I see the information, there was an increase also in unnatural deaths from 46 to 62. But then if you look look on the quarter reports from JICS, they in quarter two and quarter four only received unnatural death reports from DCS, in both instances 28, which means that we're sitting with a deficit of 6 deaths, which according, if my calculations are correct, there were no report on from DCS. So the question is, how does JICS first of all deal with this occurrence when they find that not everything has been reported to them, and then second of all, it would seem also not natural that there's huge numbers in two quarters and then virtually nothing in the other quarter. So it would seem the reports are not done in a timely manner. So it would beg the question, what does JICS do to address this? And then lastly, Chair, there's this issue of 8.7 million rand underspending on the part of JICS, despite the fact that they requested an additional 1.3 million. So I don't know whether the underspending occurred very late in the financial year, but it would seem strange that they ask 1.3 million for additional IT equipment from Treasury, but then ultimately end up with an underspent amount, as usual, the 8.7 million. Thank you.
Honorable Horn is a good example of the investigative character of the members of Parliament. So if you are not ready, don't answer, because we don't want you to be prompted on things like that.
Honorable Chairperson, as I have said, that I have with me here the subject matter expert, especially in relation to the use of force. I do have answers, but I guess Professor will be able to give in detail information. And use of force, and also on the issue of reporting. And I guess I'm harboring under the impression that Professor will also touch the issue of the dysfunction of the reporting, electronic reporting that we are experiencing. And on the issue of the underspending, I'm also having with me here the, I can call him, our CFO, by the name of Mushwane. Please, Professor.
Yes. I think mine also is the issue of the underspending, what Honorable Horn has already asked. But I'm of the view, or I may be wrong, but I'm not getting the exact feel of the spin-offs of all this investigation. What after we've investigated, then what happens? And now we're also not addressing us about your problems. Last time we met, you raised a lot of problems. Have those problems been resolved? Among others, it was related to independence and so on. Is everything fine now? We find the proper suitable model. I find it a bit difficult that you raise other issues and now are they over? And if they are over, then you must be able to tell us how did you get through to be over. Exactly this nature of the cases. What is the relationship with the department, with this as? Because I take it that the expecting judge will, in the main, will look for the interest in the main of the inmate. So, what
what is the relationship with the department, and do you have cases in where you have litigated? And also comment on the staff complement. What are the challenges around the staff complement? But in the main, I'm just not getting addressed on the main issues that we have raised last time we were here. Those problems, how did you resolve them? How far are we? And I'll come back to Chairperson for more questions after they've answered the this one.
Yeah. I think also maybe the judge is introducing a new vision, and some of the things that they were raising will have to be dealt with in terms of the new vision. I think your questions are fair, and I will leave that to them to deal with them in the light of the new vision that seems to be guiding them.
Honorable Majaki.
Thank you, Chairperson, and to thank Jigs for the presentation. Why is this position of the CEO permanently acting position? Maybe next time when you come, we'll have a CEO.
You guys might respond.
Okay. And then the CEO, the acting one.
You are the minister, you must respond. This one is the DM must respond.
The judge is saying the CEO, you can give this me.
You must respond, you know it better.
Okay, in terms of the number of complaints you've registered, when I actually looked at the types of complaints you are reporting about, the number quintile, we're talking about 45,690 in 64. Is it because, can you see now, because then you report about how many assaults, how many transfers, how many healthcare, how many appeals, bail and legal representation. It doesn't come, it comes to 31,000. So somehow the numbers don't tally. And I wanted to know, maybe it's because I don't understand. Can you just clarify that? I would be interested also to know, out of the total number of inmates, how many are illegally migrants? I went to Sun City, visited the, out of 8,000 inmates, 1,000 are illegally migrants. So that we understand the implication of this to the country. See how much money we are spending. Maybe it's something that we need to have it on record, even if we don't know what to do with it yet. But for South Africa to put it on record as to how many would be the illegal immigrants. And also to look at what the law is saying in terms of incarcerating too many immigrants. Yes. Your consultation with ECS also is very important. Honorable Bongo has just mentioned it. So that we can see the point of convergence to make your service to be meaningful in this area of work. How many consultations you've got? What do you bring forward to them? The type of recommendations? Are they responding to them? Are they not responding to them? And I think moving forward into the future, it will be good if you present a report of this nature to manage to indicate it as to how often you've met with the correctional services and the kind of recommendations put forward. And even themselves, what they've actually put forward to you, because it must be like a two-way process. All right. I think that's it, Chairperson. Or about the mental illness, you're saying 85% of the correctional services have got mental, which means all of them. Okay, can you explain it? What the 85% is saying? because the figure is scary. And I need to understand. You are actually saying that they have decided that they should not be separated from other inmates because they will harm themselves. So they are put with other inmates. Did you consider the extent to which this might actually affect inmates to be living with somebody who is mentally disturbed? And if there has been any assault or harm of any inmate, how many this articulates to? And as to whether there's any strategy of giving the counsel the correction.
I don't want to micromanage you, so each one of you must take the